Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where I fear football peaked on June the 28th, 2021. Spain have stumbled upon a formula. Morata misses a sitter. You might as well write it into the plan, let's be honest. Unai Simon makes Pedri score an own goal just to bring him down a peg or two. And then they actually attack with the handbrake off. And then they forget to stop attacking. It caught on the break when 3-2 up in the 92nd minute before Morata shows us the benefit of a coach with patience and perhaps a country having only one actual centre-forward to choose from. Remember the Barca treble season? Remember January when no one could see a plan and the team was a shambles? Maybe Luis Enrique is not peaking too soon again. By the way, how does he get to be described as wearing an outfit when he's in jeans and a white shirt? That's the opposite of an outfit. He's basically just a fit guy with lots of hair. And so he looks good whatever scruffy clothes he puts on. Spain will face Switzerland next after they beat world champions France. Kylian Mbappe's performance was clearly worse than two-goal Karim Benzema's, prompting Florentino Perez to double his bid for the PSG striker. Gareth Bale, Memphis Depay, Frenkie de Jong all get a decent holiday. And by decent holiday, I mean sitting in their own house. Or in their case, one of their many houses. Portugal are out, although Cristiano Ronaldo is the current leader in the race for the Golden Boot. On British TV, we heard Roy Keane advocating Cristiano punch João Félix in the changing room after the game. I must admit, I missed the exact reason why it was João Félix, but punch him anyway, just to be on the safe side. Maybe punch two or three, just to make sure you get the guy actually responsible. If Roy Keane was a manager now, he would check with the performance analyst before deciding who to punch after the game. Listen, Gaffer, we need to have another look at these figures, but I think the early indication is that Pogba should definitely punch Mbappe, Griezmann should call Lenglet a coward, and we should set fire to Kimpembe's clothes. But come back to me later. Football has changed, Terry. Football has changed from when we used to punch people after football matches. Right, so welcome along, everybody.
Thankfully.
Yes. welcome to our new...
Yeah, I must admit, there was a few fisticuffs moments in my generation that, not to the extent that Roy Keane's, there was a few arguments and whatever, but I don't remember anyone just marching into a changing room and on behalf of the manager or the manager punching a player. I was quite bewildered by that comment. João Félix only came on for a few minutes.
Did all right.
Young player, a couple of attempts that went off target. One he possibly could have done better with, but dragged it wide. But he wasn't the reason that Ronaldo and Portugal crashed out. It was quite bizarre. Thankfully those days have gone. If they ever existed, as I said, there was a few moments, a few rows in the change room after the game, managers and players amongst each other, but no, genuinely just walking in and punching someone in the face and that person accepted it. So it's bewildered.
On the basis of, ball possessions recovered, versus XG versus chances taken.
Expected punches, XP. Yeah, I'm going to have to take one for the team. Hold your hands up as you walk into the change room and let everyone sling a right hook at you. I get where he's coming from in terms of players should be more demanding on each other and don't accept mistakes, which does rankle with me at times. I see the ball going up to a centre forward, for instance, your team's under pressure, you're defending the lead and it goes up to the big centre forward and he doesn't hold the ball up. He gives the ball away as people are trying to get up to support him and then they're chasing back. It does, you know, there are incidents where you feel the players should be more critical of each other on the pitch, but in the right way. So I think that's another element of the game that's gone, that a player can just hold his hand up when he's really messed up and causing his team problems and no one really says anything. So, but that's the nature of the modern footballer. We coaches are to blame, I believe. They've taken away too much responsibility from the players. So everything is now, everything is instruction towards a player on a match day, in training. You know, the gone are the days where you took responsibility for picking up someone at a corner, that warming yourself up before a game, warming yourself up to come on as a sub. Players don't even have that responsibility anymore. Someone is there to do it. All the things that we didn't need to do, to be told to do, the players are told to do now. So, of course, when they look around for instruction. They're always looking to the bench. So they don't have to take as much responsibility. So it's the coach's fault. I would love, I mean, I'm not desperate to go back in the coaching. It's been far too long, but I'd love to go back in and see what the reaction would be if he walked into a change room before the game and said to the players, right, warm yourself up. And you amongst you decide who's picking who up, marking who at corners. Maybe give the captain, if he's a centre back, the responsibility. They'd do it. But we see it now with, you know, substitutes are coming on. They come on with almost with an instruction booklet. There are cases where players run on with notes and hand the pieces of paper out. You know, the players, the coaches are poring over an iPad before a player goes on as a sub, knowing full well that you're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go and you're putting a striker on. He knows what his job is, I promise you. But that's the nature of what we've done for this generation of footballers. But certainly, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute go around and start physically assaulting players because they've made a mistake or two.
We will. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Euros, but we need to have a chat about Diego Martinez and Michel Getafe, Robert Moreno, etc. Terry, for the La Liga stalwarts, which are most of the people listening, I guess. I don't think many people have joined us just for the Euros. There is a new price on the Patreon. Yuri, welcome along. I think he's taken the Tuchero price. That's very, very good of you, Yuri. But there is a cheaper price. So if you go patreon.com/LTEL. Then you can join in and support the podcast, which would be very nice of you. Excuse me. Right, let's have a look at that Spain game, Terry. It was tremendous entertainment, wasn't it? Almost forced upon them by the calamitous mistake by Unai Simon, who, funnily enough, you'd said you weren't convinced he was the man for the job. To be fair to him, he rebounded well, didn't he? He made a couple of fabulous saves. After
a couple of good saves. They weren't fabulous. I thought it was overrated in terms of the saves.
The extra time one just before the...
I thought it was a save that he should make. I know it was close range and whatever, but I thought, yeah. And my criticism, and I put it on Twitter, my criticism, I just think he's been elevated too quickly for his own good. I really do feel there's he's current obviously now, but a future Spain goalkeeper there. But sometimes when you get thrust into that limelight in a really big position, which is playing in goal, you are prone, if you do make a mistake, you know, you are under the microscope. And I just feel he's been pushed there too early. And I think, you know, in a couple of years' time, if his progress had continued, and he hasn't had a great season. I mean, someone put on Twitter yesterday, the mistakes he's made this season, I retweeted it. Because I was accused of being, you know, saying in hindsight to people that don't listen to the podcast, of saying, oh, it's easy to say in hindsight. But no, it's something I've said all along, that he made more mistakes this season in goal than any other goalkeeper in La Liga. And I do feel that there are other goalkeepers around in La Liga that haven't been anywhere near the national team that I think have done it on a more regular, longer basis. And I was surprised when he initially was picked as the number one. And you know, I think he comes with mistakes. I still think there's another mistake in him, particularly with what we saw yesterday when the ball's played back to him. You know, I think it's a modern fault of the game now, that where the ball goes back to the goalkeeper too much. So, but I'm not going to criticise Pedri because that's the way it is now. But it was a ball that passed back that he should have dealt with. And I also think when, you know, the ball is at his feet, he's one of those that has, you know, is prone to taking a heavy touch and having to try and find his way out. We saw a mistake earlier in the season for Spain when he came out of his box and knocked it too far, missed the block tackle, and the opposition were able to score into an empty goal. So it'd be interesting to see. I imagine Luis Enrique will stick with him because he wants to prove that his choice is right all along. And Luis Enrique is striking me now as someone that, whatever everyone else thinks, he's going to do the opposite. And if he does win it, it'll be a massive two fingers to everybody around, because even yesterday you can criticise, why did he change the team, you know? But what we do know with Spain is they have lots of good players. And I have to be honest, when you do change the team around, it doesn't make much difference. Yeah. You know, I think that they're all pretty much the same standard. So still a surprise that Gerard Moreno was left out, still a surprise that Marcus Llorente is left out, a surprise that Jordi Alba was left out and Gaia come in. There's no difference between Jordi Alba and Gaia. Preference, individual preference. They're both very good left backs. The substitutes that came on were good. Adama Traore was the player omitted from the squad, wasn't even on the bench, having come on in the previous game and everybody thinking he's got a part to play now. He just wasn't even in the squad. I think pretty much everyone, I think Diego Llorente is the only one, I'm not sure, that hasn't had playing time as an outfield player. So everybody's being used. Some are making a really good impact appearing from the bench, like Ferran Torres. And Alvaro Morata, as you said in the intro, is Alvaro Morata. Fantastic finish. Played well. Missed another couple of chances. But I do want people to get off his back. I mean, he's got a couple of goals in his tournament now. And he's having a decent tournament. But he is one of those that is always going to be criticised for the mistakes that he makes. He needs Pedri to go in and fill him in.
Yeah, yeah, and that'll be it. Then he'd take all those
sorted
chances he misses. Yeah. So where do they go from here? Because I actually, obviously Switzerland beat France. I actually, in a way, think Spain would have been fine against France. I mean, not that they would necessarily have automatically beaten them. But I think Spain are good against a team that will come out at them. You know, once a team has to leave those gaps, Spain are excellent. Switzerland might defend very, very deep and then try and hit them on the break with pace. That's easily, distinctly possible, isn't it, for a game plan?
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's a. But in saying that, I thought if Spain got an early goal yesterday, it would open the game up. But it was the other way around. You know, Croatia got the first goal of the game, and you're thinking then this is a problem for Spain. But they responded well. I mean, to score 10 goals in their last two games is some achievement for a team that was struggling to score goals. And I think there are obvious reasons why. When I see the ball going into the box now, Piliquet was a great example, playing right back. He broke up an attacking move from Croatia, run the ball out the back, passed it, and then carried his run into the box. So there's clear instruction now for me that's obvious that Luis Enrique has demanded that his players get into the box more, because I think that's why Morata was receiving the criticism. He was isolated, two wide players were playing really wide, no midfield runners, the fullbacks weren't pushing forward. So I think we're seeing a more attack-minded team. So if you want to sit back, if Switzerland do sit back and Spain get the ball wide and they get the ball into the box, then expect to see Koke had a fantastic chance, I think at 0-0, with a fantastic pass from Pedri, Koke running into the penalty area. So I think the onus now is on Spain getting more players into the penalty area, hence the reason as Piliquetta carried on his run, gets it in with a great cross and scores with a fine header. So I think there have been subtle changes in the system of play from Spain, as opposed to the first couple of games when they had a million passes and didn't penetrate. So I think even if a team sits back in Spain now, I think with the way that they're playing, I actually think that they'll embrace that now. Maybe knock a few passes off and make sure when the ball does get wide or there's an opportunity to run from deep, that those midfield players aren't getting themselves higher up the pitch. So I think that, listen, if you're Spain, you're delighted France have been beaten. That's for sure, because I think, you know, if Spain had played France and France beat Spain, then everybody from Spain would be, well, that's okay. You know, we qualified from the group. We beat Croatia. We got knocked out against the favourites. But I think now they'll be thinking to themselves, you know, the way competition football, way the draw opens up, big clubs get knocked out, the whole format changes, you're plotting a path and it can completely change. So I think Spain in you know, in a great mood now, we'll be pleased that France are out. And I actually think they will beat Switzerland.
Sajid had asked us a question before. This was before the game, about whether Isco is a mistake, the absence of Isco amongst the whole discussion of the squad. Would he have made a difference? Is it too late for Isco because he's not playing enough club football?
He's 29, so it's not too late. But I understand why the reservations from Luis Enrique in terms of not picking him for this squad, because he hasn't played much football this season. I think because he hasn't played much football, he does look sluggish. It doesn't look in great shape at times, but that, you know, it can be tough if you're not playing much. Being called off the bench every now and then, not really nailing down a position. His position is number 10, which Real Madrid haven't used. So I think a fit Isco that's playing on a regular basis still would be an asset to the national team, but not at this moment in time, I don't think. I think Luis Enrique is justified in not picking him. Hmm. Good player, still a good player, though.
Yeah. So, did you see France, by the way? You're not contractually obliged to watch
France
game? Yeah. I mean, it was a brilliant day's football, wasn't it? To get two absolute thrillers back-to-back was tremendous fun, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, and keeping the goal scorers, I've had to, you know, get the iPad out today to make sure that I remember all the Spain scorers, to remember the goal scorers in the France game as well. The comebacks from, you know, in both matches as well. I would suggest Croatia was slight underdogs, but certainly Switzerland were underdogs to the extent that the commentaries in both games were oldest games all over. And I'm looking 20 minutes to go. No, I promise you, you know, it's not. Because as a leading team, you might just think, oh, that's it, job done. But you look and think, well, if they get the next goal, there is still time. So you're aware of that. If you're the team that's losing, you've got nothing to lose from there on. You just chuck everything at it. You know that attacking substitutions are going to be made. You're going to take a gamble. It might end up 4-1, but if you get the next goal, then nerves set in. So I was surprised in both games that people finished those games off both at 3-1 because there was far too much time, playing time left for the two teams to get back in it. And ultimately, Switzerland were successful. Croatia was successful in taking it to extra time. So the comebacks were part of the drama as well. As I say, both from what I would call underdogs. And for France, you know, at 3-1, when Pogba scores a great goal, it did appear that the game should have been won by France. But as I say, Switzerland threw everything at it. And on balance of play, I mean, even to the extent Didier Deschamps took off Griezmann, and there was a couple of other changes, and that kind of looked as if, well, we're not worried about extra time now. Mm. We're 3-1 up. And then when you see France in extra time, the players, the changes they'd made, I think Benzema went off through injury, didn't he? But when you saw the changes made, you looked at France in extra time, it didn't look the same team as strong as the one that started. So with France, there was issues about the defensive system. Longley was at fault for the first goal from Seferovic, who, you know, we remember him from Real Sociedad, where he showed moments, didn't he, a few years back, where he could be a decent centre-forward, didn't score enough goals, but he was a real thorn in the side of the French team. And, you know, if you get the deliveries into him, which France allowed, then, it paid off for Switzerland. Deschamps will get some criticism, changing to a back three. Issues at left-back, Lucas Hernandez wasn't fit. I looked into it because he's the obvious left-back, and he was back on the bench, not expected to be on the bench, and clearly wasn't fit because he, at some stage, he would have come on. So certainly there's an element to accuse France of throwing that game away when they went 3-1 up, became complacent. Switzerland now they had a go, and then kind of it was inevitable, I thought, that Mbappe would miss. I think the sequence of penalties, everyone was a good penalty. There was one or two where the goalkeepers got close, but in general, they were all good. And you just had this feeling when Mbappe turned, you know, walked up, it was the last one. His game hadn't been great. His competition hasn't been great, to be honest. And he was the first penalty that was too close to the goalkeeper. Good save from Sommer, but it wasn't a great pen.
Can I ask you about Mbappe and his price? Now, all football clubs are doing a huge amount of data analysis. They're watching. So Real Madrid, okay. Yeah. You never quite know with Real Madrid, okay. Because there is a lot of Florentino's personality goes into a signing. Yeah.
But I'm laughing at the fact you think that Real Madrid do analyse the stats before buying a Galactico.
So obviously, the sort of the days are gone where you watch someone at the World Cup and they, oh, we'll buy him. You know all about the players in advance. However, does having a bad tournament affect a player's value at that level of the game? Because, as you say, if it's a Galactico signing, it's about, as you know, generating interest, as we call it in inverted commas, shirt sales, creating a buzz around a club and that kind of thing. That's not, all that is slightly tarnished, isn't it, by him having a bad tournament. It doesn't change him as a player. doesn't change the 50 games a season he's going to play for his club team, does it? But it does. Part of that razzmatazz is just the edge is taken off that razzmatazz, isn't it?
Yeah, I think in the past that certainly was a case, but I think with the Champions League being as popular as it is now, you know, in the past, I mean, the European Cup where it was two legs all the way through, there wasn't group stages, there wasn't, you know, wall to wall coverage around the world of every game that PSG play, for instance, and so I think that you know, it came about then that every 2 years there was a major international tournament and those players that stood out became the world superstars. So I think, you know, Mbappe's form hasn't been poor. I've been disappointed. I wanted to see more of, you know, from him. But there wasn't really one game where he stamped his authority on it and looked to be a real danger. So I think it will hurt his reputation. It won't hurt his price tag. But I think the reputation of being the next Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, with him and Haaland, you know, Haaland isn't there, of course, but with Mbappe, he did need to do, you know, some special things in this tournament. So I think that there is an element of, yeah, I think it is, you know, people that have already made their mind up on him might just sit back and think, is he the real deal? Is he going to be Ronaldo? Is he going to be a Messi? Is he the next genuine superstar? Because there were elements of his game that weren't particularly good in this tournament, and opponents, you know, seemed to be able to keep him quiet, whether that's down to the way that France play. Or played in this competition, but he didn't find the space. We didn't see that blistering speed. He didn't take on and beat too many opponents throughout the games that France played. Didn't get himself into too many goal-scoring positions. So it's, but he's a young player. It won't harm his long-term career, but I think it does, you know, raise one or two questions at the moment as to genuinely, is he going to be the best of the best or just brilliant?
The thing we need to remember, think about all players from now on, is that Messi and Ronaldo were like nothing before, and you can't expect the next waiting but around for the next Messi Ronaldo is just, you know, previously the best player in the world might have been Zidane for a while, it might have been Brazilian Ronaldo for a while, might have been Ronaldinho for a while, but they weren't. Their stats weren't sort of
15%.
Yeah, 15 years of scoring 50 goals a season like Messi and Ronaldo. Yeah. We're not going there again, are we? In any, you know, it's an unrealistic expectation. So Mbappe, Haaland might be brilliant players, but to expect them to think, oh, well, not as good as Cristiano Ronaldo, is it? It's mad, isn't it?
It is. But I think that's the expectation levels. I think because of those two players, we are expect them to be, you know, above the rest. And, you know, that will be, it was a shame that Mbappe wasn't able to show that for him and for those that watch at home. So it'd be interesting, though, that this seemed to be a way of playing against him, didn't it? The team dropping deep and not allowing the space behind. He clearly is better on a counter-attack or running with a ball from deep with just one player to beat. But, you know, teams worked out how to cope with him. Cramped his space, gave defensive players good cover. And it paid off. So it's one of those things as a young player, you're going to have to learn to adapt and learn to deal with.
So as we speak, we don't know who's going through out of the big game, Ukraine-Sweden. And obviously, we don't know what's happening with England and Germany. I'm off to Wembley in a minute. So that's we won't be talking for too much longer. Terry's also off to Barcelona. Terry, you're a foreign country, Terry. It's been a while, hasn't it?
I'm facing it with intrepidation, John. I can get into Spain quite easy. It's to do work for La Liga TV, to do some promotional work for next season, to record some stuff for the new season. Getting into Barcelona, getting into Spain appears to be quite easy. I've got a mountain of paperwork, but that's all straightforward. I've got to have a test before I go because I'm only there for Wednesday morning, come back Friday morning. I've got to have a test before I go to get back into the UK. Then a day test, day two, and a day eight. And if I give a few quid extra, mate, I can do a day five and be released from quarantine. So I'm facing it with intrepidation, not knowing what's going to be happening at the airport, at both airports. So, but I'm thankful that I'm going to get back to doing some work again.
So, La Liga then. So, Diego Martinez has frozen on my screen, so bear with us, everyone. No, that's fine now. So Diego Martinez, I'm right to say he's out of work, isn't he? He hasn't gone to a club, has he? So,
yes.
Yeah. And Robert Moreno is in at Granada.
Yes.
Funny record, Robert Moreno, isn't it? Given that he's had a couple of jobs. One has been Spain manager, where he was unbeaten. Then he was at Monaco for months. So we don't know what to expect from him in a way, do we? We know he's a mate of Luis, well, was a friend of Luis Enrique's, and was the sort of the tactical brain in a way of Luis Enrique. So what do you make of that change and of Diego Martinez's prospects and his career move?
Granada had to make, you know, that to make a new appointment. Diego Martinez, it was his choice to leave. I wouldn't imagine he's too anxious at the moment. Ideally, there would have been a position for him if he'd have preferred that, to have had a little bit of time going into a new season, knowing where he was going to be. But I think he'll probably be quite content just to, you know, wait and see how things unfold during a season, whether it's in La Liga or in another country in Europe. So I think, you know, his reputation and what he's achieved at Granada is second to none. So I think I don't expect him to be out of work for too long. It's just a question of him choosing the right job.
And what level?
Well, definitely La Liga, I think Premier League. I think it'd be a brave appointment from a Premier League club, because he's not world renowned. But I see similarities to him and Pochettino. Maybe I would, to be honest, he did better with Granada than Pochettino did with Espanyol. But Southampton took the plunge to take Pochettino, then Spurs, and the rest is history. So I genuinely think that he could be a really top-class manager, one that I'm surprised hasn't been linked with any of the jobs in the Premier League. So I think it's something that he's going to have to... He's made a big decision to not renew his contract. I think he's only offered a one-year deal. It's a different world of the managers living in La Liga. So I think it's a brave, bold decision, and he'll wait and hope that I'm sure someone somewhere at some stage, if it's not now during the season, will look to bring him in as coach.
And Getafe, Michel, obviously he was there before, wasn't he? I was just checking, 10 years ago he was there last time.
I know.
So that's just because we're old. It's, you know, that's how long it was. No, I mean, he won the titles at Olympiacos, but they were a little while ago. Very different from Bordalas, of course, in his expectations and his style of play. So what do you think of Michel to Getafe?
I think it's an interesting one. I think, as you say, it's a completely different choice for Getafe. You know, and perhaps it's clear that they wanted a different choice, because they could have found someone else that played a similar style of play to Bordalas. They could have gone and got Mendilibar, for instance, who's left Eibar. So the fact they've gone down a different road suggests that they want to embrace a different kind of outlook in terms of their play. And it's going to be interesting to see how the players react. And a lot of people do say that you can't change, you know, style unless you change all the players. But I think there's talent at Getafe. Whether they can be as effective as they were in the past, not last season, they struggled last season, and towards the end of the season before. So I think that they've got the players there that can, you know, Cucurella can play, and, you know, there's players there like Aaron Barley and Maximovic in midfield that not only work hard but can play as well. They've got a decent collection of strikers. So it'd be interesting to see if we see, you know, Gene bringing the ball out the back, playing into midfield. So it's definitely going to be a different style of play from Getafe, because the manager is clearly different.
Raya Vallecano are back with us as well.
Brilliant.
Terry, aren't they? So, which, you know, an interesting club in the past. Obviously, I think they caught a lot of people's eye in the Paco Gémez days because they were playing. Funnily enough, they were playing a style of play that we now see everywhere, isn't it? Yeah. They were splitting their centre-backs and knocking the ball around their own penalty area, and we were all saying, what are you doing?
That was right. They got beat every week and got relegated.
I know everyone wants to do that.
But no, horses for courses. Andoni Iraola, the former Athletic Bilbao legend, clearly, has done a fantastic job there. Great to see someone, you know, from the recent past, get an opportunity at one or two clubs and then eventually take Rio back up to the top division. They came back well from the 2-1 deficit they suffered in the home game in the first leg to win away from home in the second to go through against the odds. I have to be honest. I expected Girona to finish the job off. So he's they don't play the way they used to. They're not direct, as in Getafe or one or two other clubs in the league. There's a normality about their game, but you can tell they have a good leader in Iriola. So it'd be, you know, great achievement from him.
I think a bit of work to do, haven't they? Quite a few players on loan, I think, weren't they, in that Rio team? So I think we get this a lot, don't we? I know we've said this before. Why the whole thing isn't done quicker, I don't know. Why, there's no reason, is there, why that playoff has to take as long and they can't just rattle through it at the end of the season and just give that team an extra couple of weeks to be ready.
Yeah, there was a week between the two legs, the final, which was is too much. Just play one game, particularly at this moment in time where you could have had the neutral game, neutral ground, and got it done quicker. But they have a luxury. I think it's quite a luxury this year in terms of the time they have between the seasons. You know, we have seen it in the past where it's been a lot less. So they're going to be a quick turnaround. Some of those loan players will want to stay. Some of the clubs that loan those players there would now prefer to loan, you know, to keep them at Raya because they're going to be playing in La Liga. So, you know, I think that is norm now, isn't it? And it's norm for half the division in La Liga, you know, to you know, leave things relatively late in terms of incomings because they're trying to do it for as cheaply as possible. And that's where you do start to pick up players on loan that clubs probably would prefer to sell, but there's no buyers. It's going to be interesting to see how the pandemic has hit the clubs this season because we've gone, season and a half now without income from supporters. They've just about got through it, some of them. But I think it's going to be a transfer market in La Liga, which we're going to see clear evidence that the clubs are struggling to make ends meet. So I don't expect outside the big guns and to see too much money spent, you know, from the clubs in the lower half, the smaller clubs in the lower half of the division.
Well, we haven't seen much at all yet, have we, in terms of transfers? Now, you can always obviously put that down to the Euros and say that the bigger players are involved in the competition. So I think it probably does run slower in Euros and World Cup years. But what we don't know is if it will, is this it? You know, is it just going to be a few loans here and there? Or Will the momentum start? Will we get this flood of signings? We just don't know, do we, what's happening?
I think we'll get some. I think big clubs will trigger it. But I do think that genuinely the bottom half of the La Liga, bottom half of the Premiership, will be cutting their cloth accordingly. And a lot of work will be done late because, as I said, clubs always, they want to put, you know, Barcelona, for instance, could trigger a whole wave of a transfer market for the players that they're looking to move on. They would prefer to sell. If they can't, then those players will be allowed to go on loan because that's the second best option. So,
Junior Firpo to Leeds as a 15 million. What do you think?
If they can get the Firpo that we saw at Betis, 100%. You know, I liked him at Real Betis. He hasn't been given an opportunity at Barcelona to play on a regular basis. I have to be honest, when he's played, he's looked apprehensive, looked nervous, didn't get off to a good start. I think he had that mistake, didn't he, against Granada in the first minute of a game, which was one of his first appearances, maybe his debut, where he slipped, gave away a goal and never really got any momentum. So it's best for him to move on, to play regular, still a young player. And at 15 million nowadays, the market, a little bit pricey. I think Barca have done well to get their money back, bearing in mind he hasn't played, but you're buying a premium. So there is a price to pay. But I think, you know, if Bielsa can get stuck into it, he can be a really good signing for Leeds.
And what is he? Is he, because Leeds don't play the back three. So is he a left back? Is he doing what Alioski was a very, very attacking left back. So is he that?
Yeah, that's what he clearly was at Betis and at Barcelona. As I say, he hasn't played much, never really been able to force his way past Jordi Alba. And there's been occasions where other players have played left back ahead of him when Alba hasn't been available. So he's lost confidence. He does need a bit of a rebuild in terms of his self-belief, self-esteem. And if he can start the season for Leeds and if he can start getting his form back, he could be a really good player. Can play left-sided centre of defence as well, which we've never seen at Barcelona. But they have had Umtiti and Longley, who've been playing in that position. So he hasn't fulfilled his potential at Barcelona. But, you know, it's I think it's you know, well worth a a relative gamble.
Right, I think we'll leave it there, everybody. So don't forget to give us a Patreon follow as well. That costs money. It costs you, I think, $3 is the low price now. And so thank you to everyone who's currently a Patreon. We are going to do a Patreon's Envision Q&A. So we've got some volunteers. So we've got some people who are keen to do it. We're looking forward to that. It's just a question of working out the timing. So when Terry gets back from Barcelona, we will try and work it out and figure out exactly when we will do that.
If I ever get back.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, if you've got a decent Wi-Fi, we could do this from Barcelona. Now we don't need to. We've seen each other about twice in 18 months, haven't we?
Yeah.
For real. So yes. Well, safe journey to Barcelona. I hope you escape the country when you want to come back. Thank you for your Patreons. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll see you all soon.